All right, guys, welcome to the show. This is Into the Apocalypse. It's been a long time since we've done one of these, but it's good to be back with you, Mr. Chudex. How's it going?
Yeah, it's going good. It's good to be back with you. It seems like it's been for freaking ever.
I know.
It really hasn't been that long, but I don't know. We were on such a roll for quite a while that having a little space seems like a lot of time.
Yeah, we should get some more on the books.
Yeah.
I've been making a little dent with Deborah, doing some solo stuff, and then we took a big step back yesterday. It was a big painful step back. Yeah. I tried to talk to her about guns.
Before you tell me, I'm just going to tell you, I told Lanny, they're doing one on guns that I'm not there for tonight. And she said, oh, that'll be good. That'll be good for Deborah. And I was like, oh, yeah, that'll be totally great for Deborah. She'll sit there and pretend to agree until as soon as she speaks her mind at all, it's going to go back in the exact opposite direction. So how did that sounds like that didn't go too well.
Yeah, I had this girl on Tess. She goes by Testimony. She's pretty awesome. She's like big in the freedom movement. She's like a rapper and stuff, but she's like, she was posting all this. I've heard her on with Kill the Mockingbirds before, and she like knows her stuff. She wants to come on and talk to us about direct energy weapons and CBDCs and stuff. So she knows her stuff. So she's going to come on and talk to us about that stuff. But I've seen her like on her Instagram, she's posting that she's doing all this like firearms training and stuff. And I was like, oh, that's rad that like, she's a feminine woman who's like out there like preaching self-defense and like how it's important for girls to like do that stuff in today's day and age, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And, her name's familiar. Is she on Twitter? She's been around for a while.
I don't know if she's on Twitter. She is on Instagram, and she has a podcast called The Great Silencing, I believe is what her podcast called, but she's been on a bunch of people's shows and stuff. So, but yeah, like I was trying to get Deborah's opinion on stuff, and finally I like stopped and like, I was like, you're for gun control. You've like, you know, argued for it a whole bunch of times. And she's like, well, I don't think it should all be illegal now, but I definitely think assault rifles shouldn't be allowed. And I did the exact thing that you're supposed to do when people say that is like, okay, what's an assault rifle? Because that's not like a real thing. It's just something that's like a made up word to trigger an emotional response in people.
Absolutely.
And she couldn't define it, of course. And I was like, well, and she's like, well, it's like, you know, I don't think you should be able to shoot off 60 rounds in 20 seconds. And it's just like, okay, you're just kind of like saying stuff now. Do you see like where that's a problem? And she's like, well, I wasn't expecting to have to define things. Like, I don't know about specific firearms on here. And I was like, well, do you see that that's like a problem with your opinion if you can't define the thing? And she's like, well, to me, it's kind of like a black gun. And when you pull the trigger, it goes like that. And I was just like, oh, Deborah,
you see, can't. Okay, you know what? An individual with that level of knowledge who has an opinion, okay, whatever, an individual. The real problem is that we're talking about a blanket statement here, but all the Dems have that opinion. That's the level of knowledge.
And I mean, our president has that opinion, you know?
It reminds me a lot, as I'm hearing you say that, it's reminding me of like when people would say, Donald Trump has such racist policies. And you'd ask him, like, what? And they'd be like, well, you know, like all of them.
Yeah,
oh, there's so many. I can't even begin to list them. And it's okay, just say one.
Yeah.
And they're like, and it's the same thing with these, like, define an assault rifle. And it's like, I don't know, a gun that goes brrr. you know, it's
like, I would rather someone say, I don't really know much about guns, so I think they should all be banned.
If someone said something to the effect of, I don't know how to define that, but it's the kind of guns that militaries use. And I don't think civilians should have military grade weapons because I think military should be able to take over civilians. Okay, that's your fucking opinion, but at least it's your opinion and you're being straight about it. But yeah, gun that go brrr is it's kind of perfect.
Yeah, it was like full on just liberal news media talking points. It was crazy. Well, and I kind of thought about it at the end, and I was like, okay, what's a way that I could explain it to her the way that she's explaining it to me? And I was like, okay, what's another thing that we're at odds on opposite ends of the spectrum about? Okay, how about abortion? That's emotionally charged. We both have different opinions on that, even though I think her opinion's closer to mine than she knows, because she doesn't want to abort babies that have already been born.
Right.
But if I'd said, well, I'm against abortion, and she has a well thought out in her mind what it already is, and she says, okay, well, can you define to me what abortion is? And if I say something like, well, so this is how the argument works. If I went like, well, I mean, what did you want? Did you want me to like Google abortion before I came on the show or something? Because well, isn't it like, and then she was like, no, Adam, tell me what abortion is. And I go, well, I mean, I'm against it because that's like when they take a pregnant lady and cut her head off so that the baby can't be born, right?
Oh yeah, that
it's
level
like
of
that's
wrong.
Like what it is. That was like right. The argument, you know.
Sure,
so,
sure.
And if I that was that. If that was my, so she got mad at me because I was like, well, you shouldn't have an opinion if you don't have like the facts, you know. I'm not expecting you to have facts and know specifics about firearms or anything like that, or what an assault rifle is. But if you can't define it, then you shouldn't say that it should be banned. You know, you shouldn't try to take other people's God-given rights away if you can't define at least what you want taken away.
There you go. That's well put, Adam.
Yeah.
And I don't mean to shift away from Deborah per se, but I saw that the shit libs get a good talking point in here on election day. It's election day today, so yeah. I hear. And did you see there's a school shooting?
Oh, really?
Yeah, in Seattle.
Oh, wow.
Ingram High School. I don't know shit about it. I was on Twitter for 10 minutes earlier, and it was like a high school name is trending. So I click on it because I'm like, I hope it's about that. Sure enough, it is that. And all I know about it is what I read from just, you know, 10 to 20 tweets that I scanned that were on the trend. And they're all people saying, this is why you need to be voting Democrat today, kind of things. Like no one was saying how many people were injured, if anybody died. A few said that the guy's in custody already, you know. But yeah, I don't really know anything about it, but it's so insane to me that on election day there's a, I don't think it's, and I'll say this too, I don't think it's a red flag. I don't think a false flag. I think that if it was a false flag, they would have done that 5 days ago and had the whole buzz about it. It's real bad timing to do a false flag on the day of election day.
Yeah.
But the idea that it is election day, people are out voting, and they're going to use this tragedy. I assume it's a tragedy. I mean, yeah. Maybe it was a school shooting where no one got hurt, in which case I wouldn't call that a tragedy. But let's assume it is a tragedy, and they're using that within the moment it happens to say, today, go out and vote this way because some psychopath shot a gun at a school.
Yeah. And you know what's even wilder to think about, or another thing to think about, is that there was one last week, I think.
Was there?
With an AR-15, a bunch of people died. And you know why you missed it?
No. Was it? Why? Why?
Let me hear your guess.
Black guy?
Yep.
Yep. Yeah. Right.
Black student.
If it wasn't a black, if you'd said no, I would have said, okay, which color?
Yeah. Yeah.
You
yeah.
know, like what non-white was it? Or what, you know, was it a trans person?
Yeah. Cause that timing would have been perfect. You know, they could have blown that.
They would have loved that. We would have all, if it had been someone that they could have pegged as white supremacist, and they could have blown that up and made it a huge talking point for just even 3 days, just 3 days of that, would probably be a good move on their part. Except I guess a lot of people vote ahead of time now.
Yeah.
Election day, it doesn't kind of mean shit anymore.
Yeah. I voted in our local stuff. I voted for governor and like our sheriff and all that stuff. So,
but I almost did, but I forgot to.
Yeah. I mailed that off a couple days ago. So
speaking of today and election day, I caught a pretty cool sky event this morning.
So is it done?
Yeah.
Oh man, because they
It was
said
at
it was
3 o'clock
gonna happen.
this
They said
morning.
it was gonna happen on election day, so I was expecting it to be like tonight.
Right.
So I
No,
didn't take a
it.
look, but I went to bed last night and it was really, really bright in my room. So
Ah, yeah. Yeah, it was cool. I was upstairs with little C, the almost 2-year-old. He was having a hard time. I finally got out of his room. I got downstairs. It was 3:15 a.m. And I went, I just got to go outside. I'm sure it's cloudy out there, but I just got to go take a look. And sure enough, I was like at the right moment. I went and woke up Lanny and everybody else. I was like, hey, you guys got to come see this because
yeah.
it was cloudy and stormy and all that crap. But there was just an opening right there. Moon was red as could be. Weird shadows going on. Looked like I've never seen it before. It was pretty cool.
Crazy. I wish I would have
So,
caught it.
and I assume that set off the occult ritual that was election day.
Yeah, I know. And one of the Rothschilds died too, I think. So, but
Interesting.
yeah. Yeah, I wish I would have caught it. It was it's been the weather's been crazy here. It's been really stormy and like all these flood warnings and stuff. And then today it was beautiful, beautiful sun. So
Yeah,
but
it's similar. Were you windy today, though?
no.
Oh
Did you
man,
guys
we've
have a
been
big wind event?
well, sort of. Let's see, what is today? Today's like Tuesday. I
Yeah.
think it was Friday. There was a wind event. We get a lot of heavy wind right where we're at, so nothing was too out of the norm for here. But I guess down south near Seattle, it got pretty crazy. A lot of people were out of power for more than a day,
Oh
and
wow.
a lot of trees down,
Yeah.
stuff like that.
Yeah, it got a little bit windy here, but nothing too much. But yeah, our creek is like really, really, really flowing now, so it's pretty cool.
Yeah, we've had.
Nice.
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just not saying it's nice. I looked at the weatherman inside my phone and he said that it's gonna be like sunny for like 8 days in a row. So
Oh, no kidding.
yeah, no rain in the forecast.
Yeah, because we got dumped and dumped on for a few days in a row. Then the winds came yesterday. So, like yesterday, I would have called that a full-on storm. And then today, the rain's gone. The clouds have blown out. It's still windy. It's probably like 50-mile-an-hour winds out there,
Oh, wow.
but that's normal for us. Like it's nothing but farmland to the north and east of here.
Yeah.
So, and we're down in this valley. And we're like right, I think just where our location is where it all funnels in. So we tend to get some of the heaviest winds for our county, like right, literally right here. Because yeah, it's that sounds really windy and it is, but that's just kind of anytime it's coming from the northeast, it's like that. It's when it gets up into the 80-mile-an-hour that it's like, oh shit.
Yeah,
I hope we survive.
if you go down to the highway and then follow the river like way out to the gorge to the east, going towards the middle of the state, like that's where they this time of year too is where they get the really, really wild winds out there.
Yeah, it's
So
like it has room to pick up speed and not hit anything or something to
yeah,
that
it's like
effect.
that big river gorge valley thing. So, but yeah, we lost another sheep, kind of sucks. So
I'm sorry to hear that.
yeah, I've got sick from some sort of a bacteria that's like alive in the just naturally occurring in the grass that comes up when it rains. So
Well, that's a surprise.
yeah. But yeah, he was the one that we went and picked up in Numclaw this summer. He never really thrived. He was pretty small, he wasn't really growing. And yeah, I just found him pretty much passed out like in our barn. Called my neighbors, they came over, gave him some medicine, said he'd probably make it, and I woke up in the morning and he was done.
But
So
they recognized what it was. It's not, it's common to whatever degree in your territory.
yeah,
Yeah.
it's like the large, like I looked it up online and it said it's like one of the biggest small flock killers in like the world. So
Huh. So I guess that's something you just can't avoid. I
Yeah,
mean,
you can
maybe
like
there's stuff you can spray that sucks,
there's
but
stuff you can give them, like you can like give them like some sort of weird drench in the fall before the rain, I guess might help, but yeah, everybody else is fine. So he might have just, who knows what if it was that or what, but he just wasn't ever really doing very well. So, but I got all the other sheep separated out and getting them bred. So I got two rams. I gave two to the two girls to the big guy, to the big hair sheep, and then I gave one to the to our little one that was born here. So hopefully we get three, all three of them bred, and then
yeah.
I think my pig's pregnant.
Cool. I was gonna
Yeah.
ask how are the piggies doing? Is it
They're doing good, man. They're really fun little
yeah.
animals. They tear shit up, but they're fun to be around, man. I really enjoy having them.
That's great. I really
So,
want to come down and meet them.
yeah, it's the little one, Pigward. He broke out of the fence. He like pushed the bottom of the fence out so much that he just like got it to flip up and like got out
Yeah.
from it. And so I got to put like a strand of barbed wire at the bottom. But
Something to hold them back.
yeah, he's pretty funny. And then yeah, I went and bought a bunch of cover crop the other day to like throw out like after they go through an area. I got to keep moving them because if you leave them in one spot, it'll turn into like a giant mud pit like
Right.
in like a week, you know.
Yeah,
So
we messed around with pigs a little bit at our previous place, and we did not move them enough. And
yeah, and
that was very apparent very quickly.
these guys are supposed to be like less like easier on the land, and they're still super rough with it. So
Sure.
yeah.
Little tillers.
Yeah. But what else? Anything else going on? Our guest should be here by now. I should send him a message on here. I'm excited. I hope he shows up today.
Not a lot else is going on around here. I mean, it's kind of nice. Things are slowing down in that, the weather change makes it that I can't do as much. So I'm
Yeah.
spending a little more time inside, which is it's kind of nice as a change. I'll feel the opposite when I once the weather changes back. I'll be
Yeah.
itching to get outside more. But yeah, it stayed it well actually it creeped up to like 40 for a little while today, but it stayed below 32 for a couple days. So it's bundling up weather. It's annoying. Like I got one more thing to do outside. I gotta get dressed again. Like I gotta put all these layers on just to go
Yeah.
outside for 10 minutes. Otherwise I'm freezing my fingers and hiney off.
Yeah, I got these really awesome like waterproof insulated gloves. So I wear those out whenever I go out because I go out in the morning and I have to feed all the animals and then like I have to like run the hose and stuff like that. So
Yeah.
like having warm hands like allows you to stay outside for a lot longer.
My warm wet my warm weather. My warm cold weather gloves are some of my best friends.
Yeah.
They're important to me.
Yeah, I've been burning a bunch of piles.
Oh yeah.
So,
That's fun. I love
yeah.
burning shit.
Yeah,
It's
it's
if I just had free time all the time, I would just like hang out at a burn pile burning shit all day.
yeah, I've got like multiple ones. I burned this one out in a pasture that was like the remnants of an old building that was out there, and it was still just like piled up out there, and then it had a bunch of aspen trees growing around it. So I cut down all the aspen trees this summer. Put it on top and then I burned it a couple days
Cool.
ago.
You using your tractor for those fires?
No, the pile was all there, no tractor necessary. And then I think it's getting a little bit wet out in the pasture for the tractor. So
Oh,
I haven't taken it,
sure. But,
but I gotta get out there and like it's got metal and stuff in it, which sucks. So I gotta clean it all out. And I think there was some sort of like shed building that had like power to it and stuff out there.
Oh,
And
boy.
they had it torn down, so it's not too much. There's nails and stuff in the pile and some old piping and stuff, but nothing
Gnarly
too
ass
bad.
shit.
Yeah.
I love my tractor with a burn pile. I'll just have it out there and I just kind of keep pushing stuff together. Use it to dump larger stuff on top as I go, but that exhaust comes right out the front at the bottom, at least on my Kubota.
Oh,
so every time I come in, it just like pushes, it like really fans the fire. I mean, it like blows in there for a minute. And I think back to the days before I had a tractor. It's like, what, I use my hands for all this shit?
Yeah. I think I might have sent the invite to the wrong email. Let me pause. I'll send another one, and then we'll. All right, guys, we're back, and our guest is here. I sent it to the right email eventually. Adam Stokes, you're here for the second time, also known as Adam the Giant Guy. Welcome to the show, man.
Great to be back. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, after the last time you were on, everybody loved the show, and we got a bunch of emails in, and people are like, wow, that guy teaches Latin. That is very rare these days for anybody to know the language, let alone teach it. And, you know, it's rare to have it taught at a school. We'd love to hear a show on Latin, and not in Latin, but on Latin. And
I don't know if I can do a show in Latin. I think that'd be too much.
You'll lose me quick if we do this in Latin.
I think a lot of the times when we do the shows with my mother-in-law, Deborah, it's like Latin to her. So... But it's always been, you know, I grew up Catholic, and it's always been interesting to me. And yeah, so.
My dad, he passed last year, but he was raised Catholic. He was born in 46. And when he was young in Baltimore, the mass was still all in Latin.
Yeah.
And his congregation was all Black people and Polish people from World War II. And nobody understood what the hell anybody was saying.
Yeah. I don't know that many Catholic people anymore, but I know it's hard to find a Catholic mass. I actually drive all the way into Portland, which is like an hour, to go to Russian Orthodox Church. And I pass a Catholic church that actually has every Sunday a traditional Latin mass.
Yeah, there's a couple here in Jersey. There's one down in, so I'm in South Jersey. If you keep going south, 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 you'll get to Berlin, New Jersey. And there's this one church, it's called Mater Ecclesia, which does the mass in Latin. And like everybody goes there, and whenever there's a Catholic bookstore near me, and I'm always buying books. So they're like, you know, if ever you want to hear the mass in Latin, go to this church. So everybody knows about it. It's pretty popular.
Yeah, I think if I was...
It's the only one, like, in the state does, like, a traditional Latin mass.
Really? That's crazy, because I'm in, like, rural Oregon, and this is kind of, like, in a rural community, and I drive past, and it says it on the sign, like, traditional Latin mass every Sunday.
Yeah, that's the same with Mater Ecclesia, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it's cool. So how did you first become involved with Latin?
That's a story that goes a long ways back, long time ago, galaxy far away. Yeah. I was in seventh grade. I was 12 years old, and I had gone to a new middle school which taught Latin. And my mom forced me to take Latin. I was like, why am I taking this language, Ma? This is a dead language. They had French and they had German. I really wanted to take German. I'd actually learn German later. But I really wanted to take German, but my mom was like, no, you should take Latin. So I went into it. I really hated it at first, but I had a really great teacher who became my teacher all throughout the rest of my time in middle school and in high school, Mr. Beto. I talk about him all the time. He was just an amazing teacher. He made me really fall in love, not with like the Latin language per se, but just with the Greco-Roman world and gladiators and emperors and all that cool stuff.
Past the old past, world.
Yeah, yeah. Orgies and stuff. We didn't talk about orgies. So.
but you knew they were there and you could look for them.
Yes, yes. So we learned all of this Roman history. I just really fell in love with the ancient world. And for me, Latin has been always something that's connected me, you know, to the ancient world. And when I was in high school, when I was in middle school, when I was that awkward kid, I always felt like I fit in more with that ancient world than I did my own present crappy world, as crappy as high school and middle school can be sometimes. There's some great moments in it, but it can be kind of rough. So Latin became kind of my escape. And then later on when I went to college and knew that I wanted to be a teacher, Latin continued to be with me. So I continued to take Latin in college, Latin in grad school, looking at ecclesiastical Latin in particular. So all that Catholic stuff, the Vulgate, the Latin Mass, Latin liturgy, Latin songs. And so when I was going for a PhD, when that didn't work out, then I was like, what can I do with all of this, this knowledge that I've been taught? And so I ended up going into secondary education, becoming a high school Latin teacher. And that's what I am now. I am teaching at a wonderful school, Lawrenceville School. It's a very prestigious school in near Princeton, New Jersey, and having a blast. We're reading the story of Ulysses now in Latin. And we're going to read some more stuff. Catullus, who was a Latin poet, and also Virgil, who's probably the most famous Latin author. So that's my story in a nutshell. So it begins all the way in middle school, nearly this upcoming year. It'll be 30 years I've known Latin. So it's been with me a long time, longer than my wife. So yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome, man.
Yeah.
So I want to ask you a question. I hope it's not too basic.
No
but
problem.
I'm pretty basic when it comes to this kind of stuff. But you even mentioned it in what you just said of you called it a dead language to your mom back when you were forced to take it before you fell in love with it. And now I've heard that over and over throughout my life. Latin is a dead language. Latin's a dead language, but it doesn't seem like it is in a sense to me, because it almost seems more like a very prestigious language. Because all of our plant names, all of our like so many things like are in Latin that it's like this code to the more deeper understandings of our modern current world as it is now. But yet we call it a dead language. How did we get to where that's the phrasing?
What's up with that? Yeah, so I have a t-shirt. I don't have it on me right now, but it says Latin is not a dead language. My wife, she's a lawyer. She makes a hell of a lot more money than I do, but in law and in medicine, Latin is still the primary language, like you said. So if you go to be a doctor, if you want to pursue a career in medicine, you learn a lot of Latin terminology. And in fact, my wife, when she was in law school as a lawyer, she had to take a Latin course for legal Latin in particular. So Latin is still very much the language used. And she always, has these terms, quid pro quo. Oh my gosh, I can't pronounce Latin. and stuff like that. So Latin is still used there. Not to mention that you have a bunch of languages that are actually spoken today, Italian, Spanish, Portuguese, French, Romanian, that all come from Latin. And it's not entirely true that Latin is not spoken. There are actually two places in the world where it's still spoken. One of these you'll guess really easily. It's the Vatican. It's the official language of the Vatican. However, if you go to the Vatican, everybody speaks Italian, so nobody really takes that too seriously. But the newspapers and stuff are printed in the Vatican in Latin, so that's kind of freaking cool there.
I've been to the Vatican. I went to midnight mass in Latin at the Vatican, actually.
I was at the Vatican this summer with my wife for our 10-year anniversary. We went to Rome for the first time, and St. Peter's Basilica. That was an amazing experience. Even though I'm not Catholic, that was an amazing experience.
You see the pine cone?
Yes.
Yeah.
So very impressive, very
Yeah.
impressive.
A lot of
So,
weird stuff in there.
yeah, a lot of very interesting stuff. And the tomb, the crypt of all of the different popes and stuff.
Yeah.
Pope Alexander's down there, which I love. He's the Borgia Pope. So, and all that stuff, all their inscriptions are written in Latin. And then in some parts of France, you have Catalan, which is very close to Latin. It actually evolved from Vulgar Latin. Most people think it's a dialect of Spanish, but it's actually from Vulgar Latin. So, certain places in the Mediterranean, as well as, of course, the Vatican, still speak some form, some dialect of Latin. Vatican is ecclesiastical Latin, and Catalan is a vulgar form of Latin.
What, when you say vulgar Latin, can you get into that a little bit more?
Yeah, just it basically just as it sounds, kind of politically incorrect version, ghetto Latin.
Yeah.
So
Like,
it's very rugged, kind of, how can I say it? Unrefined version of Latin.
I take it that that's where our term vulgar comes from.
Yes, yes.
Vulgar language
Yeah, so
is
even the Latin Vulgate, which seems, which is the official Bible of the Catholic Church, it seems all holy and stuff. That actually means the Bible in the vulgar language, in the language of the common people. So, which ironically it ended up not being, because as European history went on and European states adopted their own languages, Latin became the language of the upper class, of the priestly class. So it was originally the language of that everybody in Western Rome, the Western Roman Empire, would understand. It evolved to the point where only the elite understood it. So go figure.
Well, that brings me to the first question that I had from one of our listeners to the show, another guy named Adam.
Nice name.
Sir Mount Shasta, yeah, is what he also goes by. And he wanted to know, I don't know if you just answered it all the way, but he wants to know if it was ever a living language, like a language of the people of a whole country or
That's an
whatever.
excellent question. Latin, classical Latin was the language of the Western Roman Empire. So, the Roman Empire back in its day, there were two languages that were really big, Greek and Latin. So, the people in the Eastern Empire, and this is where you get the Eastern Church from, the Greek Orthodox Church, they spoke Greek. The people in the West, where Rome was, spoke Latin. So, that was a living language. We know that from a lot of the sketchy and kind of basically pornographic graffiti that people have excavated and found in Rome. So people spoke this language. This was their language just as much as it was as English, is our language. And we get glimpses of that even in the Latin Vulgate. So there's a very simple syntax, very simple grammar, which seems to be the way people talk to each other. Back in the day.
And
And
that
then
was that. I have a very limited knowledge of history of the church, but was that Latin? So you're saying Greek was spoken by the Greek and the people that remained Orthodox. Was
in
it
the East, yep.
post schism 1054 that Latin starts appearing, or was it before that? Do you know?
It's before that. It's before that. It's all throughout. So you have classical Latin even before Christianity, with Virgil, Cicero, even Caesar writes his commentaries. So it exists then. And then as the Christianity takes over the Roman Empire, Latin becomes the language of the Christian Church in the West.
Okay.
So you have these interesting tensions that go on all the way till, the Great Schism, like you mentioned, in the 11th century. So the Nicene Creed is originally in Greek,
Yeah.
as is the Greek New Testament. But then when these things get translated, especially the Nicene Creed, they get translated, it gets translated into Latin. And there's a whole controversy over that
Yeah,
because
there's
Holy.
like two words that are different between
Yeah.
Orthodoxy and Catholicism that like
Yeah.
it's and it's
That
a
makes
huge
them split. Yeah. It's
Yeah,
like
it's like a
it's a big
huge
freaking deal.
rabbit hole
Yeah.
that could be a whole podcast, you know?
Yeah. So that's going on all throughout kind of the history of medieval Christianity until, like you said, the excommunication and the Latin Church, the Western Church does its thing, the Greek Orthodox Church does its thing.
Got it. Yeah, it's really interesting hearing about how much differences came from the churches just by a few words being changed in translation, or like what the actual trans like. I go to
Yep.
catechism every Thursday night, and last week we were talking about the Lord's Prayer, and they were talking about the part where it says, "Give us this day our daily bread." But once like translated back into Greek, it translates into like, "Give us this day our super essential bread," which isn't
Yeah.
just like, it's not just like eating a bread for sustenance. It's
No,
like your
it's like it's the
spiritual
actual
bread.
Eucharist. Yeah,
Yeah.
it's
Yeah.
the yeah, it's the Eucharist.
So
Yeah. Yeah.
it's really, really interesting. And it's like, I've been saying that prayer since I went to Catholic school in third grade. I didn't never
Yeah,
knew, you
you
know?
never know this stuff unless you know the actual languages. Yeah. The big one is like homoousion in Greek, of the same substance, and there's not really a way to translate that into Latin to convey that. So you get, I think, simile substantia, of a like substance, which is basically Arianism, which is the opposite of what the Nicene Creed was advocating for, but there's no way of saying of the same substance in Latin, so there's a whole controversy over that.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Wars are fought over this stuff. It's wild,
Yeah,
you know?
yeah. There's a great book. I recommend it for any ancient history buff. Julian by Gore Vidal. It's about Julian the Apostate, and it
Yeah.
kind of goes who tried to revert the Roman Empire back to pre-Christian paganism, and he and all basically all of these controversies over Latin things running into Greek, Greek running into Latin, are talked about in that book. But it's a really good book, highly entertaining. One of the things that made me want to go into studying the classical world in the first place.
Yeah, by Gore Vidal. That's an he's an interesting guy. So
Yes.
his old debates with William F. Buckley are
Yes, I
classic,
remember
man.
those. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those went crazy. Buckley was calling him some nasty stuff and
Yeah,
vice versa.
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think some of Buckley's maybe hidden homosexuality might have been came out in those debates, but
Oh,
that's all up for
absolutely.
speculation. So
Yeah.
another question that Adam had was, why do you think that it became a the language of science and legal and he says religious too. We just kind of did that one, but
Yeah.
why did the league why is it still used in legal terms and science terms?
Well, it becomes that because back in the day, once you have the Christian Latin Empire, the Christian Roman Empire, which eventually falls, and then you have the Holy Roman Empire, Latin is the language of the elite. And
Okay.
in the medieval world, the lawyers, the doctors, the priests were your elite. And so that's kind of retained even after the Protestant Reformation, and really in the West, when you talk about the United States and Canada, and I guess Western civilization in general, where there isn't really a theocracy anymore. So that priestly class is kind of done with, but you still have doctors and you still have lawyers, and those are still considered high professions. And so Latin was kind of retained in those fields because so much of the terminology, it's easier just to learn the Latin term than to try and translate this terminology into into the language, into hundreds of languages literally. So it was just easier to retain that, and this language, Latin language, was something that was attached to these high class positions.
So if it was just the if was it just the language of the elite?
Yes, by the time I think once you get into the Christian Roman Empire and later on with Charlemagne and the Holy Roman Empire, then it's definitely the language of the elite.
Is there a
And they're still
reason?
using it. So Germany, for example, the Habsburg Empire is still using Latin in the 18th and 19th centuries, even though they're ruling Bohemians, Hungarians, etc., and Germans. And they're all speaking these different languages. The official legal correspondence is still Latin.
Got it. And why do you think it was only used by the elite and not by the proletariat or the regular common people?
Yeah, that's a good question. That, a lot of that has to do with just the development of languages in Europe. So Dante, for example, Dante, we think of him as, writing these great Italian poems, but he wrote a lot of stuff in Latin as well. But Dante, he basically decides to create a nationalistic language. So really, the reason that Latin falls out of favor with the common person is that you have the rise of these different European nationalisms. So French nationalism, Italian nationalism, where people want their kind of their own language to identify them with their own specific culture. So they're not trying to be unified. In fact, a lot of the battles with the Italian Papal States and the Vatican comes from this desire to have to have this nationalism distinct from the unifying aspect that Latin how can I put it? That Latin kind of highlights in that Latin was the language of the government and of this whole of this kind of Holy Roman Christian ideal. I'm not sure if I'm making too much sense. I'm kind of blanking out here,
Yeah,
but
it makes sense. So like as time went on and maybe the country, as the country's kind of splintered and developed their own culture, that's when the other languages
They're
arose.
dividing and they're saying, well, wait, if the state talks like this, we don't talk like that. We have our own way. We're going to separate ourselves by speaking differently. But
What
yet,
becomes of European nations don't want to be under this Holy Roman Empire, for who the uniting feature of it is this Latin language. So they want their own. So as a way to identify themselves as a separate culture, as separate peoples, they develop their own language. You see this very clearly, like I said, in the history of Italian. Dante basically invents the Italian language so that he can rebel against the Pope. He's like, I'm sick of the Pope. The Pope is an a-hole, basically. And all of, if you read the Divine Comedy, it's all basically bashing, which is interesting, because I don't know how the Divine Comedy didn't get burned, how Dante or the Divine Comedy didn't get burned at the stake, because it's very anti-clerical. Dante, as basically the originator of the Italian language, does this in defiance of the Pope. Same thing with Luther. Luther is basically the inventor, through the German Bible, of the modern German language. As any German, you know, when I learned German at Yale, when I learned German even in Heidelberg, everybody will say Luther invented our language.
And that's
And that is
Martin Luther from
Martin Luther.
the article. What was his, what was
99
it?
Theses. Yep.
Yeah, the pamphlet.
Yep, the articles, 99 articles, 99 thesis. Yeah. And so he does that to make a distinct German culture separate from the empire, empire and the Pope.
Well,
And
you know, and
that's.
it's a perfect way to assert your own independence. I mean, think about it. Like if we were to invent our own language, the three of us, we could be so independent that we could put out a podcast that no one can even understand except for the three of us, you know, like, and if we taught that to people, we could teach it to 10 people. We'd be this elite podcast that's like, it's only us and the state and other factions couldn't even understand what we're doing. So that makes a lot
Not a
of
bad idea. That'd
sense.
be a cool idea. Yeah.
Yeah, we should do that. I'll get right on it.
Has any of what you've learned in Latin led you? Oh shit, I'm still muted. No, I'm
No,
not
you're
muted.
good. You're
Okay,
good.
good. Sorry. Has any of what you learned about Latin led you into studying about Babel?
Like languages in general?
Do you think that that there could have been a language? What do you think the language was prior to the Tower of Babel?
That's an excellent question. Well, I know Latin itself, ironically, a lot of people don't know this. Latin is an Indo-European language. Now you get the European part, but people don't get the Indo part. Latin is very similar to Sanskrit. In fact, if you know Latin and you have transliterated Sanskrit, I can't read Sanskrit itself, but if you transliterate it, you'll see a lot of words are directly are very similar to Sanskrit. And so for the word aqua that we get even in English, like for water, that comes from Latin, which comes from Sanskrit. Exact same thing. A lot of people don't know that. Now going to the Tower of Babel, which I do believe, I don't, you know, it's funny. I kind of take the position, and this is the religious dude coming out of me, that the language before the Tower of Babel was some type of spiritual supernatural language. In my tradition, the book in the Mormon tradition, it talks about a language of Adam which was pure and undefiled. And then the people at the Tower of Babel and stuff defiled it and messed it up. But it was pure and undefiled. The prophet Joseph Smith used to say that that was speaking in tongues. So I think it was a type of language that was different than any language that exists on earth now. Now, if you talk to, it's funny because in medieval commentaries and stuff, medieval Christian commentaries, theologians used to say that Latin was a divine language back in the day. At the beginning of creation. Of course, linguistically, that's not the case, but that arguments used to be made like that in medieval times.
Crazy.
That's awesome. I like that.
What has so when you started learning Latin and you started going down and learning about all this ancient history and things like that, what's the wildest, you could call it a conspiracy if you want, or the thing that most people don't know about that you've learned because you know Latin?
That's a good question. I gotta think about that. Let me see. So I think that the wildest thing is that's a really good question.
Sorry to put you on the spot, man. You can
No,
pass.
no. No, that's fine. There's so in I mentioned the Habsburg Empire earlier, and for many years there was this code world, there was this code word, this code phrase that the Habsburg Empire had, and nobody could decipher what this code word was. And basically it turned out to be a Latin phrase saying that Austria rules the entire world. But nobody knew what it was. It was written on all types of Habsburg things, so napkins, cabinets, stuff like that. There would always be this phrase, and people thought it was German, but it was actually Latin, and it translated into kind of this imperial phrase that Austria rule the entire world. But there's a lot of stories about Latin being used by secret societies. The Knights Templar, the Freemasons that come from them. One of the most interesting things is I have over here, I found a when I was in Rome actually, I found at a bookstore the writings of Cornelius Agrippa, who was a medieval alchemist and magician, and there's an invocation in that book to invoke Satan, and if you say this invocation, you can you have power over Satan, and you can do let Satan do what you want Satan to do for you. I have not spoken that invocation. I probably never will speak that invocation. But that was something that was really interesting to me.
It's they printed out in this book at the Vatican gift shop.
It's at, not the Vatican gift shop, but it was like a random bookseller in a kiosk that was on Castel San Angelo, which is the big prison thingy. With the bridge that they often show in Roman movies. Yeah, there was a dude at a kiosk and he was selling all these different books.
So you didn't read it out loud, but if you look at it in print, you can translate it and see what it says.
Yes, I could translate it. Yeah.
Can you give us a synopsis of what it says without directly saying
I don't want to conjure up a demon, but anyway.
it?
Basically it's all this stuff, all these commands to Lucifer. Yeah.
Who was when who was it for when it was written?
So Cornelius Agrippa said, you know, he was ironically a devout Christian, and but he had this really weird theology. He believed that if everything is created by God, then everything can be used in the service of God, even those things which don't seem to be in the service of God. So he thought that if someone could control the devil, even the devil could be used, and the powers of the devil could be used for good purposes. Really interesting, really kind of weird theology. So he put out that incantation so that anybody could use it, and if they had, you know, the devil's power under their control, they could do good things. So we know that doesn't work out, you know, in movies and stuff like that. If you make a deal with the
I've seen
devil,
enough horror films. I know how that doesn't
it
work.
usually goes to shit. So yeah.
Chad, you got anything?
No, not really at this point. Where should we go from here? Because I find it so fascinating. You know, we've brought it up a couple times now that this is being the language. I was saying the of a prestigious language, and then we were using the word I kind of wanted to use, which was the language of the elite, because it blows my mind how entrenched like government it blows my mind how we talked about law and medicine being in Latin, but also like botany, like other types of science. At least botany, I know, like the plant names tend to be Latin and all of that.
That
And
goes back
that
to that science, that scientific aspect of the Latin language.
right.
So
Like the hard facts of the world as we're told, like tend to come from people who are speaking Latin. And I don't know, it permeates this like elite like aspect to me that's
Even if
like,
have you guys ever been to Washington, D.C.?
no, never.
Yeah, a lot of the founding fathers were themselves like classicists or very classically inclined. People have written books on this. So Thomas Jefferson, George Washington, Ben Franklin. Before Ben Franklin became abolitionist, he had a female slave who he taught Latin and Greek. And so all throughout Washington, there are like Latin inscriptions and just references to classical culture. So kind of that elitist class, even in colonial America, had Latin as one of their languages.
Yeah, I mean it's all over our money and everything. E pluribus
Yeah,
unum
e pluribus
and
unum.
yeah.
Exactly.
Right. It seems like learning Latin as you have and you've taught others too. It just seems like it's like I feel like you could like figure out the secrets to the universe by not just like speaking it, but like hearing it. Like because I hear Latin all the time, and I just hear it and I translate it as, oh, that's the Latin name for something, you know? But it's all over the place. Like Adam just said, it's on the money. It's everywhere.
Even
I
within our
don't.
vocabulary, one of the things I tell my so I teach high school students, and they're like I was 30 years ago, why am I taking this language? And I'm like, look, so many of our words in English have Latin roots to them, have Latin prefixes, have Latin suffixes to them. So this is a really good way of just understanding the English language and what English words mean through understanding Latin. So like you said, Chad, I think you hit the nail on the head. This opens up a whole, all the possibilities, all the ranges of meanings of different words just by having that grounding in Latin. And so I tell students, it'll be really good for your SATs if you guys learn Latin. So if you don't get anything out of Latin at all, just know it'll be good for your SATs.
Yeah,
So
exactly. Cause like something that I've talked to a lot of people who get into they get into what they call like word magic, where we're using words like we're maybe misusing some words, like English words. An example would be to understand. It's we should overstand because we come to oh come over the knowledge once we have it, but instead we say under, and some people believe in ideas like that we're using spells because we spell the words, and that we're kind of like putting ourselves in these weird trances from all these words.
it gets into
It's
all
a,
that like maritime law and natural law stuff too.
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's all just like utterly fascinating to me. I don't know what I do and don't buy out of any of it, but it seems like Latin is sorely untalked about within that word magic world. And I don't know if that's something that interests you at all, but it does seem like you're saying like understanding Latin is to understand the language, which might either debunk some of these ideas, like maybe understand has more of an it makes more sense once you understand the root of all the words. But at the same time, maybe you'd see pull m more threads that you can pull that's like, oh yeah, because this English, some of it's sort of backwards from its own roots.
One of the things you have, I like to point this out to the students, are Latin cognates of English words and vice versa. So you'll have a word in English that's directly influenced from Latin. However, you can have what's known as false cognates. So words that look like they're influenced by Latin but aren't influenced by Latin at all. So that mixes things up a bit. So a word that you think you might understand better because it sounds similar to something in Latin, you're actually misunderstanding it because it doesn't have a relation to Latin. That does happen in some cases. So the whole word magic thing, what's the meaning of this word that really kind of depends on whether, you know, it's an actual Latin cognate or if it's a false cognate.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's funny to see like a lot of people who try to, a lot of people that don't know very much about who try to, there's a bunch of grifters trying to pass themselves off as people who know a ton of stuff about the sky clock. I don't know barely anything about the sky clock, but I know grifters, and I know that there's people that are doing it ingenuously, and they like use all these, like say sun and like sun and son, like same thing. And it's like there was no English at the time when that was happening. And so like these people trying to draw comparisons between words when
Son
the
and
when
us.
that when like the language at that time didn't exist, you know. So when you learned German, was it before or after you'd learned Latin?
Oh, way after I learned Latin, at least. So I took German. My first German class was in 2005,
Okay.
2004. So yeah, it had been at least like 11 or 12 years since I started taking Latin.
Yeah.
And then I didn't really like pick up on German very well until I actually had to live in Germany and had to, you know, fend for myself and make sure I had a place to stay and
Yeah.
could get to eat. So I took courses while I was studying in Germany in German. And so that was like 2011 or something. That was almost 20 years after I started taking Latin.
Yeah, I was just gonna say how much easier it probably is to learn a language once you have all that root, the roots and everything down like that. And it's if you
And
can.
you basically learn languages. This goes case for at least the way they teach with languages in the West. It's just like how they teach Latin. So you have different cases, the nominative case, which is your subject, the genitive case, which is your possessor, the accusative case, which is your direct object. And that's how I was taught German. So you had your subject, your nominative. You had your accusative, which is your direct object marker, and stuff like that. So that's across the board. That's how people learn most languages: French, Spanish, German, Portuguese, what have you. So the kind of the structure of the Latin language facilitates learning other languages.
Yeah, I studied Italian in college. I took four I got a minor in it. I finished all
Oh,
the
nice.
way. I went and I stayed in Italy for a couple months, one summer too, and I came back and my Italian was really, really good. And I like the velocity that I was able to speak at, and my comprehension was really, really good. And then I changed, we went up to a higher level. I think we went up to like Italian three. And switched professors and I had a professor that wasn't very good, and it all went out the window. You know, when I used to drink, I could actually it would come up sometimes, and I could speak a lot better then. I don't drink anymore. I don't barely know any Italian anymore. But it's interesting because like once you have a base in one of those romance languages, everything else is kind of you could probably learn it really fast. And I had a pretty good knowledge of Spanish because I grew up in California. So like Italian, being around people speaking Spanish all the time, you can kind of mix those together. And I remember my grandmother was from Italy. She was a teacher in the Central Valley in California, and she didn't speak Spanish, but they like put her to teach the Mexican immigrant kids, and she like was able to do it. And then later on in life, she was fluent. And then when I was a little kid, she would get super mad at me, and she would yell in like a mixture of English,
Italian and Spanish.
Italian, and Spanish. So,
Communism. Yeah. I mean, I can, Latin has helped me with, you know, comprehension with other languages. So I can read Spanish and French. I can't speak them. But if you gave me a Spanish, a text in Spanish, a text in French, even to some extent Italian, I could read them. But yeah, my spoken Spanish, which I'm always ashamed about, since in the past so many of my kids have been Latino. So my spoken Spanish isn't that great. If you threw me in the middle of Mexico or South America, I'd probably be okay. But it could be much better.
Then you got Portuguese, and that's like a mix of Spanish and
Yeah, we have
French.
a bunch. So here in Delran, South Jersey, we have a very large Brazilian community. In fact, where I get my haircut, My hair's not cut right now, it's a little shaggy, but where I get my hair cut are some Brazilian barbers, and everybody's like half the community speaks Portuguese.
And that's so much different than Portugal Portuguese as well.
Yes, as people from Portugal remind you. Yes.
I've done a ton of Brazilian jiu-jitsu in my life, so I can like say bad words and stuff like that. So, but go ahead, Jeff.
So Adam, with that, you were talking about how in the English language, you see suffixes and different portions of words that come from Latin. You see that repeated in all these other languages, which is what makes it so easy to adapt, I assume. Man, that's got to be one hell of a skill. I'm terrible with languages. I only speak one. I've hardly been to any other countries, mostly just Canada and not to the French-speaking regions. Although I grew up in on Canadian TV, so I did learn a little French from Sesame Street when I was a kid, instead of Spanish like other kids do.
It's funny. I got a very funny story, Chud. This was summer of 2005 when Star Wars Episode 3 was out. My mom, dad, and I drove up to Canada, to Montreal, and we went into this. I kid you not, we were in this section. We went to a grocery store. Everybody spoke French. I didn't know what the hell French was. Like, I didn't know anything about French. Everything's in French. Food's in French. People are speaking in French and everything. And I was like, oh crap, does anybody know English here? I don't know how we made it around the grocery store in that area because it was all French speaking.
Well, what I was going to get at is that it seems to me like even with my lack of knowledge of multiple languages, a lot of the time if I submerge myself in that language, I start picking it up just like listening. I couldn't speak it back. I couldn't read it. I couldn't write it,
You could
but
understand.
I start to understand. I notice this a lot. Like I used to be into some really underground, horror films and things like that, and I would get my hands on a copy of some movie from Germany, but it didn't have subtitles and of course hadn't been dubbed, so I'd be like, well, I'll try watching it anyway, and I would find by the end of the movie I'm like, I understood that whole movie. There was nothing that I didn't miss any of the, I mean, maybe I missed some nuances that someone who did understand the language could have filled me in on. But like, as far as like the basic plot of that movie, I didn't actually need the subtitles. And it's almost like I just start tuning out the language and I start to understand it by just absorbing it. It's language is so fascinating to me.
It's interesting because I think that goes back to kind of this, talking about the Tower of Babel. It goes back to this era of knowledge that we had where speaking whatever we spoke, we understood it as human beings. And I think, Chud, when you tune in, when you're watching something, I've had similar experiences. I like Eastern European movies a lot, and I don't know any. I don't know Polish. I don't know Bulgarian, Hungarian. I have close friends from all those cultures, but I don't know them myself. But like you said, you can kind of at some point, if you're watching a movie or something, you can kind of tune in. Your mind kind of tunes in, and you're able to understand. If you're trying to understand, your mind tunes in and you're able to understand, basically the gist of what's going on.
Yeah, our brains seem very adaptive in that sense. I wonder how.
We don't do it that often, so we don't think we can, and we don't really pay attention to it.
Yeah, that's why, because like I'll mention that in some ways to people sometimes, and they shake their head and think I would never even begin to try to watch a movie in a language I don't understand without subtitles. But I wonder how intuitive Latin would be, because like I hear Latin phrases and I never seem to know what they are. My translation is always just that must be Latin. Like I wonder if I were to watch a movie that was filmed all in Latin, to submerge myself even better in the culture, like just go to sleep and wake up and suddenly I'm in a Latin culture, Latin speaking culture. I wonder how intuitive that would be, and how quickly someone could pick up on that.
That's interesting. It's interesting. There is a movie out called The First King about Romulus and Remus. It was done by a bunch of classical scholar nerds. It's actually really good. It's kind of along the lines of Game of Thrones and Gladiator. It's really bloody and violent, but it's filmed in it's spoken in Latin.
The First King.
Yep.
Cool.
Writing it
I just
down.
a
I
question
used
is
to have it
pop.
on DVD, but yeah.
Okay. I just thought of something. Where does the term when referring to Spanish speaking brown people Latin come from?
Yeah,
Yeah.
that's a good question. Like Latin America.
Yeah, why is it called that?
Yeah, that's a I should honestly know this. I think it's from the Spanish influence of Spain, somehow I'm going to say, but I'm not sure of the direct connection about that. But yeah, that's true because if you do a Google search and type in Latin literature, for example, you'll get Latin American literature, you'll get thousands of entries, which don't really have anything to do with Latin. Now, remember, Spanish is a language that comes from Latin, but I'm not sure why the term Latino is used or Latin American.
Yeah, a lot of
I really don't
languages came
know.
from Latin, though. It seems like it seems
Yeah.
I've
Yeah, so
pondered this as
why
well.
not French? Why not Italian and stuff like
Yeah.
that? Yeah.
And
I could look.
maybe I'm a Latino.
All right, wouldn't it be Latinx?
Yeah,
No.
Latin, I'm Latinx.
Yeah.
We're coming up on an hour, Adam. I know you're on the East Coast, so we'll get you out of here pretty quick here, but one question more about the Vatican. Do you think that they are continuing to use Latin as their primary language to hide things from, or conspiracy show, we gotta ask, from the common people?
Yeah, I think there's a bunch of reasons that they use Latin. One is to kind of continue. So, in some ways, Latin is the last vestige of the Roman Empire, and of the Holy Roman Empire as well. So, Latin kind of represents a continuation of that empire to some extent into modern times. I do think Latin facilitates by nature of not a lot of people knowing it. People thinking it's a dead language. I think it definitely facilitates a lot of occultish things, a lot of possible occult practices. And we see this across the board. I mean, I mentioned Cornelius Agrippa. A lot of his occult symbolism was Latin. Aleister Crowley, a lot of his occult symbolism was Latin. So I wouldn't be surprised. I know people talk about Opus Dei and some of those kind of schismatic Catholic sects and Catholic groups. In the Da Vinci Code, Opus Dei even speaks Latin. So I think that's definitely possible. So Latin is an easy language to conceal stuff.
At
Yeah.
least mo in modern times, for sure.
Yeah. I think in ancient times, I mean, with the rise of the European nation states, your common person wasn't going to know Latin. That was one of the reasons that people had the Bible translated into their own language.
Sure.
So you could hide a lot of things with Latin even in the ancient in medieval times because only the elite knew it. And if it's the language of the elite, then the elite with their secret societies and everything, they use Latin and hide all of their secrets and stuff in Latin.
Yeah, it's really interesting to me going back to Christianity after being gone for so long, and then just seeing I had no idea what to expect, and I found out like full force when I started talking a little bit about the sh on it about it on the show, and how many different opinions there are in just in that one religion, and it's strange that it's all. A lot of it's over a couple words here and there, and yeah, it's strange to think that like a lot of those differences came from different translations and things like that, and who knows if it was meant to turn out that way and splinter everything all up and weaken kingdoms and all sorts of stuff. So who knows?
Yeah, it's a controversial point of view, but I have on and off throughout my life thought, man, if we all spoke the same language, it seems like throughout time we would have had a lot less conflict, and we could still to this day if we
Absolutely.
just all understood each other. And I'm also, you know, I come and go from that because I don't actually believe that everyone should conform to like speaking the same language. I like when we were talking earlier about nations dividing and having their own language to show their independence and feel separated.
Well, what if we
But
had
at
like
the
a one language and then we had like a one world government, a whole new world order? Wouldn't
Yeah,
that be
wouldn't that be
better?
just wouldn't that just be
The
easier? Just be easier. Yeah,
people are the ones
right.
heroes. Yes.
Yeah, my thoughts of that go way far back from, you know, before I started thinking about things the way I do now. And it still creeps in every once in a while though, that it's just like, man, there's so much division that can happen just over language. It's
Well,
just
you know, Google
fascinating.
Translate, I think, has really helped. You know, we all bash Google and stuff like that, but it does help. When I was in Italy, you know, I tried to speak some Italian. It went okay. But I also had Google Translate, and you know, that helped connect me to people that I wouldn't normally be connected with.
Yeah, right.
At least in Italy, they're in France, I've heard they're not the nicest about it. They'll ignore you, they'll treat you like a
No, they're
bit.
not. Yeah.
But
We
in
were in France. We were in Marseille, and then we before we went to Rome. And yeah, if you can't speak French, they're not going to talk to you.
Yeah, in Italy, if you're giving it a good shot, they'll be pretty cool to you. You
Yeah,
can always
yeah,
like point at stuff and like make gestures because that's what the
yeah.
Italians are good at, you know. Adam, if anybody wants to that's far removed from being able to take a high school or college course and they'd like to look into Latin a little bit, maybe learn some basic stuff, what's some good resources people can do? I think
Yeah.
I'd like to as well.
Well, I'll toot my own horn. I have a tutoring site, Lingua Classica. The website for that is on Facebook. So I do a couple introductory Latin courses with that, just basic grammar and stuff, some Latin cognates, Latin words that are similar to English. I think Wheelox is your standard fare for actually taking a Latin class. That might be too intense. But there are other Latin textbooks that you can use. Ecce Romani, I think if someone just wanted an overview of the Latin language and to be able to read it really easily and simply, Ecce Romani Volume 1, which is a textbook that I use with my high school students, might be really helpful. I said it's a textbook, but I think anybody who's just interested in learning just the basics of Latin, because the vocab and stuff is so easy. And so much like English would be useful.
Does Rosetta Stone or anything like that have like online courses?
I don't know if Rosetta Stone has Latin. That's a good question.
I wonder if you could find
So,
it. I'm sure there's
yeah.
something out there. I'll check it out.
Yeah.
Adam, this is really enlightening. It's like I've heard every, you know, so many different podcasts on conspiracies I listen to and so many different topics. I don't know if I've ever heard anybody do one on Latin. So we might be the first. So that'd be cool if other
That's awesome.
people
Breaking new grounds here.
Get
Breaking
you
new
on
ground.
here to
Yeah.
talk
Innovate.
about it.
Yeah.
Like you said, so if people want to connect with you, they can do it. How?
The Lingua Classica site. I also have an Instagram page, Adam the Giant Guy 2019. And I have a regular Facebook page, which people are welcome to friend me on as well.
Awesome, man. This is really cool, Adam. I think I'd like to look into it a little bit more. Parse out a little bit of my opinion on it. Maybe we could have you back and get into part two of it or something where we can speak a little more intelligently on it and keep up with you better.
That'd be
Yeah, that would be
wonderful. I mean,
cool.
I teach Latin every day, so I can definitely talk about it for a couple more hours.
Cool,
Right
Adam.
on.
Well, yeah, thanks again for everything and we'll be in contact and yeah, just really appreciate your time and you're an awesome dude. So thanks a lot, man.
Always a
Yeah.
pleasure, guys. Thank you.
All right, see you
Take
guys.
care. Next time.
Bye.
I'm not doing this for you. I'm doing this for me. I'm not signed on to killing all those old people. All those black babies, fuck you, motherfucking New World Order. I will get your ass to lay that. It pisses me off. You sign on to playing God, you get burned. And all you dumbasses that serve the New World Order are idiots. Playing God all day. Deciding who lives and who dies.
Penis man.
And then I find out they're all screwing little kids and devil worshiping. Of course they are. Oh, you're the big elites, Oprah Winfrey and Ted Turner and Bill Clinton and Epstein, all in that seven-story pervert. building in New York? What a bunch of freaks! And the fact that those pedophiles, and I'm calling Oprah Winfrey one, hope she burns in hell! Every damn one of you's a piece of crap! And you're gonna be judged, so you just continue to enjoy hurting babies and hurting old people and hurting homeless people and turn us all into a bunch of idiots, because you will be destroyed!
Mom, I'm transgender.